So in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, we have what's called Meleches Hotzah, and that applies in three cases. Number one, where you remove something from a private domain and put it down in a public domain from Rishus Yoch to Rishus Harab, and the other way around, and Dalet Amos Rishus Harab. All this is considered a Meleches Hotzah Doraisa, and it's one of the 39 Melechos. Now, what happens, and this is going to be the subject of this particular chapter, when you transfer an object from one Rishus to another, or you carry it for Amos Rishus Harab, but you're wearing it, and that's called lapel, or apparel, and it comes under the following three cases. Number one, to clothe the body, like for example shirts, pants, and dresses. Number two, to protect one's body from the elements,
right,
like for example a winter coat, a raincoat, shoes, boots. And number three, and this is the most important of the three for our purposes, and that's called a tachshit, or an ornament, like for example jewelry, a necktie, things that you may fasten down to your clothes or to your hair or to any part of your body. And they're not exactly there to protect your body, they're not there to clothe you, they don't protect you from the elements, they just sort of beautify you. I mean, there's a he touches here on a fourth category, which he says,
this is in the Masechta, yeah?
No, this is in the English translation. The trouble is my copy of the Masifta is a little bit small. I'll try to see if I get something out of the Masifta as well. The original Masifta is back in the AMIC Learning Center, so I don't have access to that. Maybe on one of, you know, if I don't know if anybody could do that for me. But anyway, so he says there's also something like a belt. A belt is kind of like, it's like a piece of an article of clothing, because it helps your, you know, your slacks to stay up or whatever it might be. And it's clipped on to your garment, but it's not really an integral part of your garment. And he says, generally speaking, when we talk about a malbush, apparel, he calls it in English, then we extend that to include any kind of clip that fastens on to your garments like a belt, because it's also the extended definition of malbush. So again, any of these three functions. Number one, if it's to protect your body. Number two, it's to cover your body. Number three, it's an ornament or a tachshit. Those three are not a problem. But let's say a key, for example.
What was that, sorry?
A key. Let's say you carry a key from one rishus to the other. Right. He says that doesn't fit into any of these categories, and therefore that would be subject to Meleches Hotzah. Now all that, what?
Okay.
All that is on a Doraisa level, on a Darabanan level. There are certain things that might come under a Tachshit, for example, but nevertheless, the Rabbanan are not going to allow you to wear it out in a public area, because what happens is that sometimes a person might take off a piece of jewelry in order to show it to someone else or for some other reason, and then before they put it back on, they carry it Dalet Amos inadvertently, forgetting about the fact that they're not allowed to do so. And then they violate a meleches havara doraisa, which means four amos b'rishus harabim. So that's already a drabanon, a gzera or a shvus drabanon, that applies to one of the three categories that we mentioned before, a tachshit, which on a doraisa level would be fine, but drabanon are afraid that if we let you wear this tachshit, this ornament, then you might come to take it off, or it might fall off, and instead of putting it back on, you might carry it for Amos Birshus Rab. That's going to be a major subject of this perek the sixth parak of Shabbos. The Masifta has just one short paragraph as an introduction to this parak, and he speaks about the fact that in the previous parak, which is the fifth parak, we differentiated between that which is necessary to protect an animal, and you fasten it onto the animal, or alternatively to control the animal, like reins and saddles and things of that sort, as opposed to something called a masa, which means a burden. So, for example, if the animal is carrying a burden on its back, that you're not allowed to let the animal in Rishus HaRabim. So that's the concept of masa, as opposed to a malbush. And there we were talking about doraisas, because the Torah says l'man yanuach shorcha, and you have to allow your animal to rest on Shabbos. You can't allow him to do malacha. If the addendum that you attach to the animal is only there to protect the animal, that's one thing. But if it's there in order to facilitate a masa, for the animal to carry something, so for example, again, I'm not going to go into this now, this is really last parak, the fifth parak, but they used to tie on certain things towards the tail of the animal that in case the masa, the burden would, let's say when the animal went uphill, it would fall back, it would catch the burden and it wouldn't fall off. It was like a little teeny wagon that... So different things like that are called a masa, and that's a real problem. Here in this parak, he says, we're also going to discuss the question of certain things that are called a masa, but in those cases, we're talking about a chiyuv chatos, because anything you carry, like we mentioned about a key, that he doesn't give that example here, but that would be a masa, that's something that you're carrying, and that would be a violation of Hotzah, or in this case, Havaras Dalet Amos, Doraisa, and you'd be chayv chatos. Most of what we're discussing here in this perek is not what you call a masa, but rather a gzeira d'rabbanan, because you might come, if something falls off, or a piece of an ornament or jewelry that she may take it off if she's wearing it, for example, and show it to someone, and then instead of putting it back on, she'll carry it. That's a gzeira d'rabbanan, atu dalet amos b'rishus harav, because she might come to carry it dalet amos b'rishus harav. All right, that's the paragraph here that I was able to make out from the Masifta. But I think what I'd like to do now, with your permission, after I take a little drink here because my throat is a little dry, I'd like to just simply read through the Mishnah very quickly, and just simply, you know, just to sort of, in a sense, I guess you'd call it, just translate the Mishnah. Bameh isha yotza, ubameh eina yotza. That is, what kind of accessories that she wears attached to her body is she allowed to go out on Shabbos in a Rishus HaRabim? And what is she not allowed to go out in Rishus HaRabim? So again, we're still talking about Meleches Hotzah here. That's the ultimate, you know, framework. And Meleches Hotzah really is the kickoff of Masechet Shabbos. Tosus at the very beginning of the Masechta points out the reason why we start with Meleches Hotzah is because we want to go chronological. The laws of Hotzah actually kick in even on Friday before Shabbos. Like, for example, a tailor is not allowed to go out on Erev Shabbos with his needle because we're afraid he might forget it Shabbos and he'll carry his needle. And in a sense, our Mishnah here at the beginning of the sixth parak is also related, or it's a continuation of that idea of something that you might go out with and at the end you might carry it. Again, here we're talking about going out on Shabbos itself, because we finished with Friday already. That was back in the first parak. Now we're in Shabbos itself. Now, again, a lot of these accessories on a Doraisa level are permissible because, as we said before, they have the status of a Tachshit of jewelry. But there are other things that, let's say, for example, a handbag or a purse, that would certainly be a doraisa if she carried that. That's a masa, that's clear. But now we're talking about various kinds of ornaments and jewelry that she wears, but she might remove them in the Rishus HaRabim and show it to someone, and then instead of putting it back onto her body, she might unwittingly... unwittingly, she might carry them in her Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, the Rabbanan said, we don't even want her to wear this jewelry. You know, I find this fascinating because a lot of halacha in marriage is that a woman, lo tiskan al baila, that she should look beautiful. And if you think of any day of the week where a married woman, should look beautiful for her husband, it would certainly be Shabbos. But paradoxically, as soon as she goes out into Rishus HaRabim, as long as she's in her house, you know, she can really look beautiful. But most women will wear these ornaments outside in the public domain, and that's where the Rabbanan are going to get very nervous, and they're going to make these gzeros. So it's interesting. The Mishnah opens up by saying, "Bameh Yotza u'bameh eina Yotza," but then it starts with the last question of lo teitze, and it establishes a whole long list of things that she's not allowed to wear. Most of them are kind of like strands or straps or different kinds of things that she wears on her head, like to braid them, or different kind of headbands. You know, again, a lot of the sociology here is not familiar to us, but there are. You know, there are common links between what they wore back in the time of the Mishnah and what women still wear today. The strange thing about this Mishnah, I'm telling you up front, is that all of a sudden, like midway through the Mishnah just sort of veers off on a different area of Shas, a different area of Halacha, that doesn't seem to be at all related to Shabbos. That's a very strange Mishnah. So let's go through the Shabbos part. The Shabbos part is Lo Bechutei Tzemer, Lo Bechutei Pishtan, Velo Bertzua Sheberosha. So different kinds of strands, whether they're made of wool, whether they're made of linen, or different straps that she wears over her head. Again, the precise definitions we'll see in the Gemara, but all these things that are tied around her hair, like different kinds of straps, that's all forbidden. And after that, the Mishnah, as I said before, veers off on a different topic, and it says, "V'lo titbal bahem ad she'tirapem." Now, this phrase, this five word phrase, belongs to Hilchas Mikvos, to a different Masechta in Shas that has to do with immersion in a mikvah, and we're worried about a chatzitza, that there may be something that separates her body from the water. So let's say, for example, she wears something over her body, and she goes into the mikvah with it in such a way that the mikvah water cannot enter into that part of her body because it's blocked, it's covered by this ornament, which is a chatzitza, and therefore our Mishnah says, lo titbal bahem, she shouldn't wear any of these strands or straps or headbands until she loosens them, and she makes sure that they're so loose that, let's say, when she goes into the mikvah, the water can enter into her hair, and there won't be any of these strands or straps or hairbands that will interpose, that will be a chatzitzo, that will prevent the water from going into her hair and penetrating between the strands and her hair, because if these strands will protect the mikvah water and prevent them from hitting her hair, then guess what? The tefillah is invalid. And it's almost that the Mishnah just went on a little bit of a digression here to make sure to tell the women that these same ornaments, which you're not allowed to wear on Shabbos and Rishus HaRabim, make sure that when you go into the mikveh to purify yourself, that you loosen them, and therefore they wouldn't be a chatzitza. And now the Mishnah...
would you say that they should just take them off?
Well, again, the Mishnah doesn't have to go that far, and you know, we're not going to force the woman to take him off as long as she can guarantee us that, you know, today, of course, let's say the mikvah ladies will be much more demanding and more strict and make sure that she takes them off. But as far as the Mishnah is concerned, strict law, she can wear these things on her hair, but she has to guarantee that they'll, you know, the water can penetrate between the strands in her hair. And that's what she has to do. Also, keep in mind that we have to ask the question, b'dieved, let's say she jumped into the mikvah and she didn't take off these strands or these straps or any of these headbands, etc. What's her status? Is she muteris l'bayla? Was the tefillah valid or not valid? So, you know, we don't have the luxury now of telling her what she should have done. We have to know what she does now. And the Mishnah would say that if she can guarantee us and calm us down that they were loose and the water got in there, then the tefillah is a valid tefillah. And now the Mishnah goes back to the long list of things that she's not allowed to wear in the Rishus HaRabim. Velo b'totefes. Now all I can tell you about the word totefes is that it reminds us of tefillin, so we're probably talking about something that she wears on the top of her forehead. That's all I can tell you. I don't know. Don't ask me any more questions. Velo bisarvitim. And I think, based on this translation that I have, you'll take a look at your translation, that sarvitim are ornaments that are worn on the head, called head bangles and so forth. And now the question is, are they attached to her body in such a way that we don't have to be afraid that she'll simply take them off? So bizman she'enam tfurim, if they haven't been sewn onto her body, or I shouldn't say her body, onto her hair perhaps, or onto her hat. You know, there are certain things that cover her head, and they are attached to the hat. So she wears a hat, and then on top of the hat she wears a certain kind of a piece of jewelry. In the Masifta I see that they have a picture of it, but you know, the diagram in the Masifta didn't come out too clearly, but I get the general flow of it, and we're talking about items which, if she doesn't really, you know, attach them in a very, if she doesn't sew them down to the hat that she's wearing, then it's an addendum to the hat. The hat, of course, is not an issue, but that which she attaches to the hat, which is called sarvitim, that's a problem if it's not tefillah, if it's not sewn into her hat, because she might easily take it off and she might show it to someone else. Now, I have a footnote here, maybe you have a similar one in your text, that he talks about married women versus single women. He says that a single woman might be more inclined to uncover her hair in public than a married woman. He says a married woman would not remove her hat in public. So therefore, when it comes to a married woman who's wearing a hat, We're not even going to question whether the hat is sewn down or if it's, you know, tied down to her body, to her hair, because she would never expose her hair in public by taking off her hat. Right. We're not sure if the same rules would apply to a single girl who might uncover her hair in public, and the question therefore, would she be allowed to go out with some of these ornaments that we spoke about, which really cover her hair? And even if they're attached to her hat, maybe we might think that she'll take off the hat. And then if she takes off the hat, she might take off the ornament that's attached to her hat. So that's just a... I'm just talking about a single woman. That a single woman might be more inclined, you know, we should be more strict, because she might be more apt to take off the hat and to take off ornaments that are attached to the hat. At least in the case of a married woman, we have no fears about the hat. And now we have to ask, well, are these ornaments sewn onto her hat? And since she wouldn't take off the hat, she wouldn't take off the ornaments that are sewn onto her hat. All those considerations might be more applicable to a married woman than to an unmarried woman. And that's what I have here in this footnote. He tells you to look this up in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, Simon Shin Gimel. In any event, let's just go through the Mishnah very quickly, and then we'll start the Gemara. He says, "Velo bekavul," and not with a kavul. So the translation here that I have of a kavul is a wooden cap. Now, apparently, this wooden cap is something that goes on top of our hat, and therefore we have more of a fear that she might take it off in Rishus HaRabim. So he writes here, he points out here in the name of Sharat Tzion of the Mishnah Berurah that there are certain things which are not allowed to be worn in a public domain, which means in Rishus HaRabim, but they're permitted to be worn in a chatzer, even if there's no Erev in the chatzer, which is outside the house, but it's not a Rishus HaRab. And he says that there are other things which the Rabbanan prohibited outside the house, and she's not allowed to wear them, even if there was an Erev in the chatzer, and she says, well, I'm only going to wear it in the chatzer. Nevertheless, we might be afraid that if we allow her to wear it to a chatzer, when she goes out of a house, she might just go out of the chatzer into Rishus HaRabim. So the Mishnah Berurah in his Sharat Tzion, in that same Siman that we mentioned earlier, Shin Gimel, has a discussion about which ornaments the Mishnah says she's not allowed to wear, even in a courtyard, even in a chatzer, and which ornaments she might be allowed to be, we could be more mekil, and we'll allow her to wear them, not only in our house, but even in the courtyard, the chatzer, outside of the house. And it all depends upon whether we're afraid that if we allow her to wear these ornaments in a courtyard, in a chatzer, she might actually go out into Rishus HaRabim. And then we're back to square one, because we're afraid that if she removes them, she might carry them, Dalet Amos, in Rishus HaRabim. Now, in the case of a kavul, here, the Chachamim were more lenient, and they allowed her to wear the kavul in the chatzer. And the reason for that is, this is fascinating, again, we didn't get to this Gemara yet, but it's about the fact that a woman should not appear unattractive in the eyes of her husband. So they allowed her to wear the chavul, this thing called a chavul, which we're not exactly sure what it looks like. Well, hopefully we'll get to that in the Gemara. Yeah. But this chavul, we're going to allow her to wear it in the house, of course, and even in the chatzer, in order that within the context of her family and her household, and of her husband specifically, she will look attractive. And we want a married woman to look attractive to her husband on Shabbos.
So, like, this is a wooden hat that, like, I mean, why would this be better or worse than a regular hat?
So, like, all I can tell you is the following, that This wooden cap was worn according, again, you know, we're way ahead of ourselves because we haven't seen the sugyas yet, but apparently based on the Gemara later on, as it's quoted here in the note, this kavul was a loosely woven cap.
Right.
That was worn under her hat, and it projected slightly beneath the hat. This is an ornament which beautified her hat. It was a kind of a cap that was underneath. It was made of wool, and it was underneath her hat, and it apparently protruded slightly from underneath her hat, and that would sort of beautify beautify the hat that she was wearing, and
the fashion of the time.
Yeah, we're turning like we're going into a time machine to try to get a picture, a feeling of the sociology of that time, at the time of the Mishnah, the time of the Talmud, and it would seem that the reason why they were more lenient with regard to this thing called a kavul is because it would be a very important element in appearing attractive in the eyes of her husband. That's the chiddush here for me, and I'm just curious to know that, you know, if you talk about, you know, some ornaments which the chachamim, you know, would forbid and prohibit not only in the public area but even right outside the home, in a chutz, in a courtyard, and then there are other things which the Rabbanan would not even allow her to wear as soon as she steps out of the house in a chutz there, and in this case, kavul, according to the Mishnah Berurah, they were more makil. He has, again, it's not his chiddush, he's basing himself on the sugya, which we didn't get to yet, because the reason why they were a little bit more lenient with regard to this kavul is because, again, if we understood the sociology, but the bottom line is, whether we understand it or not, is that she becomes more attractive in the eyes of her husband on Shabbos when she wears this kavul. So they were more flexible with regard to this this entity called a kavul. However, then the Mishnah goes on to say, "V'lo be'ir shel zahav." Now, I remember learning this when I was a youngster, but not in the context of halacha, but rather in the context of a famous song, which is called Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. I'm sure you know it. And I remember the Agadah speaks about a jewel which was created back in the time of the Mishnah to remind us of Yerushalayim. It had some sort of an engraving that had the likeness of the city of Jerusalem. And this was an ornament that was worn attached to her garment with a type of a clasp. And the Gemara is going to call this a tiara, whatever that means. We'll get to that later. But in any event, this was a tiara, right? And this was something which the Rabbanan did not allow on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim.
I wonder whether it was a tiara. Like, you know what a tiara is, Rabbi, yeah?
What is it, a pin?
It's sort of a crown that like sits on the woman's head.
Oh, I see.
It's like not a full crown, it doesn't go all the way around, but it's sort of into the front and the sides.
On the front and the sides, good.
Okay.
So again, we have a category called a katla. Okay, that's another word that comes from Aramaic, and he says the katla, which again we haven't seen the Gemara yet, but he's just giving a little bit of a preview. This was something that she wore around her neck, and that was worn tightly around her neck. And the reason why it's called katla is because it's a choker in English. A choker means it goes around your neck and it sort of kills you, so to speak.
Right.
And that's something.
There is jewelry in the modern world which is called a choker.
A choker, sure. That's why I mentioned it to you. And once again, it's something that's very beautiful, and she might want to take it off in her shusharabim to show it off and share it with her friends. And it's very interesting. We get now to rings, and the Mishnah excludes nizamim, which means nose rings, but all the poskim on the dike from this Mishnah that she's allowed to wear earrings outside the house on Shabbos, outside in the public domain. Earrings were usually covered by bands that encircled the hair. In other words, the earrings in those days, again, it's very different in our time, the earrings were sort of covered by her head covering. So let's say, for example, you know, since we're not afraid that she'll take off her head covering, therefore we're not afraid that she'll take off the earrings. Now, it's possible that the earrings up on the top of the hole, you know, where it went into the ear, the lobe, that's where it was covered by the bands that she wore or the hat that she wore, but the earrings themselves would, you know, that had a jewel attached to them, would go down below that point. But since the point in which she would have to remove them as they're attached to her earlobes is higher up, and that was covered by her bands, and she's not going to take off the bands in order to take off the earrings, therefore we could be more makil, we could be, the chazal were not as afraid about earrings that she might remove her earrings to show off to a friend her earrings. But when it comes to nose rings, which again is a slightly different sociology, although maybe it's coming back into into vogue, that's something that she might easily take off and show to a friend. And we have a few more, two more cases here. Veloba tabas. Oh, now what about rings? You know, can she wear a ring in Rishus Arab? And the Mishnah tells us that there are two different types of rings. There's a ring with a seal on it, and a ring without a seal on it. And this was very typical of the time of the Gemara. I've seen this in many, many different sugyas, in many different contexts. It's not new to me. A seal was used as a kind of a signature, and it had legal. It was legally binding. It's kind of like what do they call today? You go to a notary public. You know, he puts a seal on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in those days, they had a personal seal that was on the ring. And that is used totally for a weekday. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, sealing documents, letters, packages, whatever it might be. That would be a violation of a chiyuv chatos. That would be masa. You remember that we said at the outset that most of what we're discussing is a violation of a derabanan because they're afraid she may take it off, etc., etc. Here, even if she would wear the ring, she is in violation of a malacha d'oraisa because this is not a takshit at all. Again, when we get to a takshit, a ring that's an ornament, it's adorning, it's beautiful, it doesn't have a seal on it, it's purely an element of an item of jewelry, then we get into the drabanan. So on a d'oraisa level, she's allowed to wear jewelry in a Rishus HaRabim, but when you get to the signet ring, which is a tabas sheyesh aleha chosem, that is masa d'oraisa, and that is not an ornament. That is carrying. When we get,
why couldn't it be something beautiful? Like, okay, so it's, you know,
you mean maybe it'll fit into two categories, a double, you know, a double whammy, right? Maybe it could be a signet ring, and also at the same time it might be beautiful. But that's not the way they produced it in that time. I could come up with a couple of possible reasons why. But Enochinami, if you came up with a different reality of something that had a seal on it, but it would nevertheless be a beautiful ring. You see, I think what happens with this signet is that it takes up the whole face of the ring. And that's exactly where you put a jewel or some sort of an ornament that makes it a beautiful takshit. So again, you know, you could always come up with new, you know, that we have all sorts of jewelry design is a major, you know, multi-billion-dollar enterprise industry today. But barring, you know, all our sophisticated creations and manufacturing, in those days, there was a clear-cut distinction between a signet ring and an ornament ring. Our Mishnah is going to discuss the question of an ornament ring because our Mishnah is interested in knowing whether there's an Issur d'Rabbanan. If you're talking about a Doraisa, I'm sorry, if you're talking about a signet ring, that's not even the subject of our Mishnah. That's a Doraisa. That's prohibited because it's not a Malbush. It doesn't cover the body. It doesn't protect the body from the elements. It is not an ornament because it has no beauty to it. It's simply a signet ring. It's like, you know, fastening something onto your body that has no status, not as a malbush, nor as a takshit. It doesn't cover your body, it doesn't clothe you, it doesn't protect you, it's not an ornament. That would be a doraisa. But our Mishnah says, v'lo b'tabas, She'en aleha chosim afilu. The implication is that even if it doesn't have a signet, in other words, it is an ornament, nevertheless, it's prohibited. She might be tempted to take it off and show it. You know, I don't know if you've seen this. You know, women, after they get engaged, you know, they're always showing you their engagement ring. You know, this is common. You know, what does the ring look like? What does the diamond look like? Is it up? Is it down? Is it 50 carats? Is it 1,000 carats? And we're afraid she might carry it in Rishus HaRabim. And finally, the last case listed in this Mishnah is Machat She'ena Nekuva. And once again, we have two different categories of a needle. There's a needle that has an eye, and there's a needle that doesn't have an eye. The needle that has an eye is a weaving needle. It's not a pin that's worn attached to her garment as an ornament. So as far as a machat nekuva, which isn't even mentioned in our Mishnah, right, that has no beauty whatsoever. It's not an ornament. It doesn't adorn her. It's a sewing, you know, a weaving needle. It's got an eye. It's got a nekev. And that would be a violation of a malacha da'oraisa.
Right.
Were she to carry that in Rishus HaRabim, it's not a malbush, it's not a tachshit, it would be a doraisa. The Mishnah doesn't even bother addressing that. But in the case of a needle that has no eye to it, which means it is, you know, stitched, so to, you know, you, I don't know if that's a good word, you stitch it into a garment as an ornament, that is a derabbanan. That's a violation of derabbanan, because again, it's something that's very expensive, it's very beautiful, she wants to take it out and show it off, it's very easy to take it off, it's not sewn down, it's simply, you know, pierced into a garment, and that's a derabbanan, she might easily take it off. And therefore the Mishnah summarizes, v'im yatzas, if she goes out with any of the above enumerated ornaments on Shabbos into Rishus HaRabim, is Eina Chayeves Chata. She has not violated a Melacha D'Oraisa, because on the D'Oraisa level she has not violated Meleches Havara, insofar as it is an ornament. It is a Tachshit, and a Tachshit is one of the three categories that we mentioned, which on a D'Oraisa level you're allowed to wear jewelry in a public domain, but at the time of the Mishnah, they instituted a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan in regard to certain ornaments, where the fear was that she would take it off and forget to put it back on and carry it in a Rishus HaRab.
Rob, in terms of practical halacha, is a woman not allowed to wear, let's say for example, the Rabbi is the example of a needle that doesn't have a hole in it. So there is a fashion thing that women will take knitting needles, and let's say they'll put their hair into a bun. So obviously we're talking about an unmarried woman now. Then it's sort of I think it's a Japanese thing. They put their hair into a bun, and then they stick knitting needles into it. Like, sort of crisscross, like sort of like an X.
As far as, you know, again, your question about various pins that women wear to keep up their hair and they're not so fancy, I don't know. But what I would like to cover before we end for today is the question that I asked you at the outset. Why does the Mishnah all of a sudden, in a very atypical way, go off on a tangent to speak about mikvah laws, about what constitutes a chatzitza? You know, we're not learning mikvos now. You know, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was very careful. Every Masechta gets its topic. So let's take a look at the Gemara. Because the Gemara is bothered by this question right off the bat. Tvila mandakar shmei. Who makes mention of tvila here? You know, we're not talking about the laws of tvila, of chatzitza.
Right.
We're talking about woolen, linen, straps or strands, and whether or not she's allowed to wear them in Rishus HaRabim. What compels Rabbi Yehuda Nasi to go off on what seems to be a total digression? You know, sometimes you'll find in the Gemara you know, when, once we talk about this, so we go off and talk about this. You know, the Gemara is like bolul. You know, it's but in the Mishnah, that's very rare. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar Rabba Bar Avua Ma Tam Ka Omar. This is fascinating. That phrase Ma Tam Ka Omar is a Talmudic methodological phrase that sometimes you see two statements in a Mishnah that are contiguous, and the second phrase is answering a question, an unwritten question, Ma Tam. And it tells you why the previous statement in the Mishnah is correct. What underlies the previous statement? So the previous statement was that a woman in Rishus HaRabim is not allowed to wear, you know, these kinds of headbands and so forth and so on. And now the Mishnah asks itself, Ma Tam? And the answer is that the reason she can't wear it in Rishus HaRabim is because of the laws of Mikvos. Unbelievable. This to me is a radical revolution in terms of understanding the Mishnah. Ma tam lo teitzei isha. Why is it that the Rabbanon prohibited a woman from going out into Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos, lo b'chutei tzemer v'lo b'chutei pishnon, with all these kinds of bands and strands and straps made of wool, made up of linen? And the answer is, mipnei sha'amru chachamim b'chol lo titbol b'hem ad sh'terapim. That if it was a weekday and she was on the way to the mikveh, and this woman who's on the way to the mikveh is wearing any of these kinds of adornments over her head, she would be obligated before she gets to the mikveh to loosen them.
Right.
Since had it been a weekday, she would be required by the laws of tvila and the problem of chatzitza to loosen these straps is b'shabbos lo teitzei. Therefore, the chachamim made this gzera because dilma misrami lei b'tvila shel mitzvah. On that one occasion where she has to go to the mikvah on Shabbos, and she's on the way to the mikvah on Shabbos, she knows what the law would require of her on a weekday, namely to loosen these bands from her head in order to circumvent the problem of chatzitza. Visharyalahu, she's going to untie these strands, and if she does it on Shabbos, it's not going to be a good thing, because she thinks, well, I'm just preparing for the mikvah, and I'm loosening these bands, but at the end, she's going to start carrying these bands. And v'asi le'atuyinu arba amos b'shisram, she'll come to carry them four amos in a public area. So the law of tevila is the background to, if you will, motivate the chachamim to make this gzera with regard to these bands and so forth, accessories that she wears on Shabbos. In other words, again, let's go over the logic. Since she knows that as far as the laws of mikvah is concerned, for example, had it been a weekday, she would have to loosen these bands in order to avoid, circumvent the problem of chatzitza. She's going to do it on this rare occasion when out of 7 days of the week, her mikvah night fell out on a Shabbos. And once again, she's going to start like she would have done on any other day of the week, loosening these kinds of accessories, and then we can get into a real problem of Shabbos. So it comes out that according to this Gemara, all the accessories that are mentioned in the Mishnah could fall into two categories. One category are what we call hair accessories, and the other are jewelry that aren't worn on the hair, like we mentioned, nose rings and so forth and so on. When we talk about the first category, namely accessories that she adds to her hair, that she attaches to her hair, the reason for that gezeira is because of tvila b'mikvah. When we get to those accessories which she wears as jewelry and they're not connected to her hair, the reason for that is because we're afraid she might meet a friend of hers in the Rishus HaRabim and take them off in order to show her friend what this looks like and how beautiful this, you know, this jewelry is. And it's really interesting. Now, let me just mention that Tosfos and many, many other Rishonim teach us that when the Mishnah prohibits these woolen strands, the linen strands, the straps. These are ties that are worn around or on top of a woman's hair. However, if they're not tied around the hair, but rather these strands are woven into the braids of her hair, that's mutter. Because in such a case, we're not afraid. It's not easy for her to take off this strap in the middle of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to show it off, because it's actually braided into her hair. So according to the sheet of Tosis, and again, as I said, many other Rishonim, strands that are woven into the hair and cannot be removed on Shabbos, so then the Rabbanon are not going to prohibit this. And it's interesting because the Ritva claims that the reason why we're not afraid that she would possibly, you know, take out the band or the strands from her braided hair is not because of the hassle or because she might expose her hair in doing so in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and she's a married woman. Let's talk about a single woman for that matter. The answer is, says the Ritva, that braiding hair on Shabbos is meleches boneh, and that's a long discussion unto itself, and therefore removing the strands of a braid is meleches soser. It's the exact opposite of boneh, it's demolishing. And we're not afraid that she would take apart a braid on Shabbos and violate a melecha d'oraisa, and therefore, paradoxically, that Isur Malach D'Oraisa in the background is a reason to be matir. There's no reason to prohibit a woman from wearing these braided strands on Shabbos, because we're not afraid that she'll take apart the braid. The Gemara says, Boy minei Rav Kahana mi Rav. Rav Kahana asked Rav the following question. Tike Chalilosa mai. Okay, now chalilasa are some sort of threads, and she ties onto her onto her hair these chains that are made of open threads, and we're not sure, at least Rav Kahana is not sure, whether that's included in the prohibition, because these chains, on the one hand, they are against the hair, but they're not tightened against the hair, because as I said, these are open link threads, so due to their construction, they are not tightened around her hair or against her hair. So in this case, l'chora, there should be no problem of chatzitza, and she would not have to do any change, you know, to this tiche chalilasa when she goes into the mikveh. The water would be able to penetrate through these chalile chalilasa, and there would be no reason why the water wouldn't reach her hair during tefillah. However, Rav Kahana was worried that maybe we should, nevertheless, we should assume that there is a chatzitza problem, and therefore a woman would not be allowed to wear this outside on Shabbos because she might remove them for the purpose of tefillah. On the other hand, if we assume that because of their loose nature, they don't constitute a chatzitza, then maybe we would allow her to wear this on Shabbos. So Omar Le, so Rav responded, Orig Ka'amrit, you're talking about something that's woven, Kolshu Orig Lo Gozur. In other words, we're not talking in the Mishnah about Xera beyond strands and straps, we call them. We're not talking about a woven article. A woven article, let's say she has a hairband that's woven, is not included in the gzera. And again, the reason for that is because these do not constitute a chatzitza. Because woven means that they're very loose. These chains are made of links that allow for the water to get in and penetrate below the surface and, you know, make direct contact with our hair. So therefore, these woven chains, orig means woven, are not included in the gzeira against wearing hairbands on Shabbos, because they do not constitute a chatzitza to the water of the mikvah, and she would not generally take them off. Itmar Nami, the Gemara wants to bring another statement that supports this position of Rav. Amar Rav Huna Bered Rav Yoshua Kolshu Orig Lo Gozer. Anything that is woven, any sort of hairband, is not included in the decree. V'ika Diamri. Here's a different version, Rav Huna. Omar Rav Huna Bered Rav Yoshua Chazina Liachvasi Delo Kabden Alayu. So Rav Huna testifies to the fact that his sisters did not remove these thread bands that are made of woven chains before they went to bathe. In other words, water would penetrate them. They didn't have to worry about them. And if they went to mikveh, they didn't have to remove them for the purpose of tefillah b'mikveh. And memela, we could derive from this testimony of Rav Huna about his sisters that they would not be included in the Isur of Shabbos. Now, the premise here is that when a woman bathes, she would want the water to come in contact with her hair. And if the women are not insisting on removing these chains that are woven before they go into the bath, that's a clear indication that this chain, or shall we call it this orig, which is a woven article that she wears around her hair, is not a barrier to the water. And therefore, it doesn't have to be removed before tefillah, and therefore it's allowed to be worn in Rishus HaRab on Shabbos. My Ika Ben Hailishna, is there any difference between the two presentations here, the two versions of Rav Huna, whether he said it as a halacha or he told the story and testified about his sisters? Ika Benayu Ditnifon. The difference is going to be in a case if these chains are soiled. And lahachlish in the Amar Kol Shu Ariglo Gazru. If the Rabban never made a gzera about these bands that are woven, is haninami arug. Even though these are soiled in this particular scenario, but nevertheless they are arug, they are woven, and therefore she's allowed to wear them in Rishus HaRab. Lahachlish, according to the second version, the Amrit Mishum Kpeda, that it all depends upon whether a woman would be careful and take off these hairbands or loosen them when she bathes, then cave under tnifa, in this case where the bands are actually soiled, mikvad kapdeolai, she certainly is going to take them off before she bathes, and therefore they would be considered a chatzitza as far as mikvah is concerned, and then they would be also to wear them on Shabbos in a rishus harav. So basically, according to Rav Huna's second Lishna, in which he says that women did not insist on removing these chains and these woven hairbands before they immerse, and it all depends upon what they're makpid on or what they're not makpid upon. And it's very interesting because there's a discussion here in the poskim based on Rashi here that maybe according to the Lishna Basra of Rav Huna, any item that a woman would remove before her tefillah, like for example, even if it's not related to chatzitza, but when she bathes, that would be prohibited on Shabbos. So let's say these threaded chains would not qualify as a chatzitza, even though they're soiled, let's say in this case. But nevertheless, if a woman would be makpid and she would remove them because of the dirt and the soil that gets wet, when she goes into the bath. That itself generates an isur that she cannot wear them outside of Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos. Okay, now Tnan Hosam, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Mikvos, Elu Chotzitzin Bi Adam. There's a din of Chatzitza with regard to a person who needs Tvila to be Mitair himself. He needs a mikvah. Chute Tzemer V'chute Pishton V'aretzuos Sheberoshe Habanos. So again, we're talking about these different kinds of strands and straps, whether made of wool, whether made of linen. And very often, you know, the ladies, the girls would wear these strands and straps. Is Rabbi Yehuda Omer? Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree with the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama has this all-inclusive statement without any qualifications with regarding to strands and straps. But he says, Shel tzemer v'shel seyar ein chotzitzin. He's not worried about strands of wool because these strands of wool were actually twined together. They were used as hair ties, these bands of strands of hair. Oh, wait a second. No, I'm jumping ahead of myself. First, let's go to Tzemer, and then we'll talk about Seyar in a second. So in the case of Tzemer, we understand Rav Yehuda's logic. He spells it out. He says, "Mipnei shamayim boim bohem," that these bands do not lay tightly against the hair. The water can penetrate between them. They're not a chatzitza. And to add to the wool, he also has the case of seyar. Let's say a woman takes hair from another woman, and she bands together these strands of hair and uses them to tie her hair, and that's not considered a chatzitza. Omar Avhuna, Avhuna says, V'kulon b'roshe abono shaninu. All of these woolen and linen strands that were mentioned in the Mishnah and the Machlokes between Tanakam and Rav Yehuda, they're all worn on the heads. In other words, when it says on the heads of girls, this doesn't refer specifically to straps, but to all the cases mentioned over here, right? We have straps and we have strands made of wool, made of linen. All of them refer to these items that are worn around the head of a woman. And we don't know exactly what Rav Huna is coming to exclude when he says, V'kulon b'roshe abono shaninu. Maskif la Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef wants to figure out exactly what Rav Huna is coming to emphasize. Elam ute mai. Apparently he's excluding some case. In other words, can you wear these woolen or linen strands around the body itself, not on the head, and they could be worn around the body during tefila, and it would not be a chatzitza? It's only a chatzitza when it's on the top of our head. Ilema, if he's coming lemute de tzavar, let's say there's strands that are worn around the neck, and those would not be a chatzitza, udemai, and what's the case? Ilemelim ute de tzemer. If you're telling me that he's excluded strands made of wool that are worn around the neck, and he's telling us that would not be a chatzitza, so that makes no sense, because hashtan, we have a kal v'chomer hashtan rach al gabi kosher chotzeitz. If you have wool on top of your head, which is a hard surface, yet it's a chatzitzes. Rachal gabi rachmi boile. If she wears this very soft substance, this wool material around her neck, which is a soft substance, then for sure it would be a chatzitza. Elamute dechute pishtan. But we must assume that Rav Huna is coming to exclude the case of linen strands that are worn around the neck. And in the case of flax, this is a harder substance than wool. And therefore, you don't tie it tightly around the neck and around the skin as you would wool. Wool goes right around the skin. So therefore, these strands of linen would not be a chatzitza because they're worn loosely around the neck. Is let's ask the following question. Hashta kosha gabi kosha chotzeitz. We know that if she wears a strap that's made of linen, which is a hard material, and she wears it on the head over her hair, which is a hard material, it's a chatzitza, it's kosha gabi rachmi boy. If she wears this hard material, which is called linen, on her soft skin, meaning on the neck, certainly that would be a chatzitza. Ella Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says we have to reinterpret Rav Huna. He is talking about strands around the neck, but Hainu Tamid Rav Huna Lefisha Ein Isha Cho Nekes Es Atzma, that he focuses around this neck, or choker as we called it before, because she would not strangle herself, so she never wears it tightly. She's only wearing it loosely, and the water could get in there underneath this this choker, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Esei Abaye challenges this understanding of Rav Yosef in Rav Huna from a brisa. Habonos yotzas bechutim sheba aznehem. That girls are allowed to wear on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah Rabim strands that are in the ears. So after the girls have their ears pierced, they put strands into their ears to make sure that it doesn't close up again. And these strands or strings are usually not removed because for health reasons she has to keep them inside the holes of her ears that were pierced, and therefore there's no chashash that she'll take him out, and therefore it's mutter on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Avalo bechavakim shebetzavareim, but not with strings that are on their necks. Now, iamrit ein isha chonekes atzma chavakim betzavareim amai lo. These strings that she wears around her neck, what would be the problem? I mean, they would not be a chatzitza because she wouldn't tie it tightly around her neck, and therefore it shouldn't be included in the gzera of Rosh Hashanah Rabim. So the Gemara answers, Amar Avina, here we'll turn to Daf Nun Zayin Amid Beis, Hocha beKatla Askinan. Here we're talking about the strings of a katla, and we'll see exactly what a katla is. And here, isha chonekes es atzma. Here, it's worn apparently around the neck, and you could, the back of the neck, and it could be very tight. And why would she tighten the straps? And it looks like she's choking herself. The nichola shetira kebalas bosar. So again, this is a whole different sociology, but a well-fleshed appearance was considered a mark of health and prosperity. So it was desirable to look plump. So women would purposely tie the straps around her neck very tightly, and that would force the skin of the neck forward, if it's tight, and somehow that would impact on her chin in the front. She would have the appearance of a double chin. And since these straps were wide and smooth and they were tied around her neck, it would not injure her, even if they were tied tightly, and therefore would be a chatzitza, be asur, be shusarab. Now, although we're in the middle of the Mishnah that we studied before Mikvos, I think we'll stop here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So let's just make a note that we're at the two dots, which is four lines down on Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, and in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll cover this tomorrow.